Welcome to Mixture Stories, an open-ended fantasy and sci-fi podcast for kids. We have invented a world that our imagination can explore, and you are invited to join us by listening and adding your ideas for future episodes.
So, please visit our website at makeshowstories.com or send us an email at makeshowstories@gmail.com. Now, sit back, relax, and close your eyes as we listen to Episode 15, The Four Keys, Part 3.
A cool, salty breeze rustled her tail feathers, tickling its way up her back. She knew that it had been sent by an unseen storm brooding below the curve of the horizon. It'd be here by nightfall, but she'd be long gone by then. Settling onto the top of the mast, Annie had a perfect view of the deck below. Captain Kemp, William, Paget, Adrian, and Maya huddled around him, trying to calm him down. No one had seen her slip away. Good, she thought. Annie knew Tim had been a high-level player in the real game. Real. The idea that there was a real version of this game made her laugh. But Tim was a very experienced player in that other world, so Annie knew he'd recognize that the word she'd given him was a cheat, not a key. The question was, would he give it to William, or keep it for himself? Tim, and only Tim, would have to play it to put the events in motion that she had planned. So she would have to stay around long enough to make sure this was going to happen. Annie dug her talons into the wood and patiently waited. Everyone turned away from Tim to listen to William.
This isn't good. Not good at all.
Seemingly unaware of his friends, William paced back and forth on the deck. Captain Kemp asked what was bothering him, but his question failed to penetrate William's foul mood. He only continued to mumble to no one in particular about the problem that a metamorph presented. Then, as if a trance broke, he stared directly at Tim with the gaze of an inquisitor.
It's you. It's you and your friends that they're after, isn't it?
Tim felt like a deer caught in headlights. He didn't know how to respond. His first impulse was to give in to William, and in the past he might have, but Tim found a reserve of confidence that he had never known and went on the attack instead.
We just arrived the other day. We don't even know for sure where we are or how we got here. But you, William, you don't seem like an NPC or an AI. So who are you, and why are you pretending to help us?
William was taken back by this unexpected response.
Who I am is irrelevant. What's important is that Paget succeeds in the quest. And you. You're incapable of understanding how important this is to us all. Now, what did that metamorph tell you? I must know.
William impatiently commanded. Tim weighed how to best answer this question. Annie had not given him the first key as she initially promised. Instead, she had given him sort of a shortcut. If he had been playing this game on a computer instead of living in it, he would have called this a move to QT cheat. A way to avoid the pitfalls of following the game by going directly to the quest target, the first key. Annie's sleight of hand left Tim mistrusting her, but no less than William or Paget. In any other real game, he'd only share a cheat with a friend. So Tim made up his mind and deflected the question.
Annie told me to beware of my friend Adrian, but I don't know why.
Adrian reacted defensively and was about to speak, but William replied first.
Is that all she said? Are you sure?
Tim hesitantly nodded.
It took me by surprise. Adrian and I have been best friends forever.
But in fact, Tim couldn't remember if this was true.
I tried to get her to explain, but then she vanished.
Tim hoped his answer would satisfy his companions, and he saw from their expressions that they were, except William, who continued to persecute him with an unnatural stare. Feeling that there was nothing more to be learnt at the moment, William's attention drifted away from the group, but his guard was up, and his mind was racing. The boy was a bad liar. William suspected that there was a lot more to know about Adrian and Annie's whispered message, but he'd have to be patient to find out. Out of the corner of his eye, William noticed a gull lift off from the top of the mast. The bird circled the Katrine, soaring silently on the rising wind. On its second pass by the ship, it cawed once. Then, the air around it pixelated. In a flash, the bird was gone. William said nothing to his companions. Late that night, the storm arrived with a sudden intensity that made even the sturdy cog feel like it was made of matchsticks. Blowing in from the center of the sea, its angry winds slashed at their only sail, ripping it and threatening to capsize the ship. Captain Kemp yelled orders above the roar of the wind to lower what was left of the sail and man the oars. It wasn't immediately apparent to Tim why they needed to do this, until Adrian pointed to a rocky coast which was suddenly looming out of the dark. So began a night-long struggle against the fury of the storm, as it relentlessly tried to grind him against the razor teeth of the coast. At one point, while desperately clutching to a rail to keep from being swept off the deck, it occurred to Tim that this storm was not a random event, but rather an agent of someone's will, forcing them down a path that they shouldn't be taking. Several times that night, the storm seemed to push the Katrine and its crew to the limit. The great oak spine of the ship threatened to splinter as building-sized waves crashed headlong into her, and each time she resisted, the crew cheered and worked the oars with renewed resolve. Although the razor-sharp rocks were sometimes close enough to touch, they managed to keep them at bay, and, as the first particles of a sunrise streaked through the waning storm clouds, burning fragments of purple and red into the sky, they knew the storm was over and that they had managed to survive. By the time the sun's disk broke tentatively above the horizon, the storm had left as quickly as it had arrived, leaving the ocean a calm but churned up place. Bits of seaweed and driftwood, forced out from the deep, or dragged reluctantly out from the shore, dotted its almost mirror-like surface. It was as if some giant had stirred it up with an immense spoon. The crew of the Katrine slumped over their oars, some sleeping, others simply overcome with exhaustion. Spotting a protected cove, Captain Kemp directed those who could still row toward it. Once safely inside, they dropped anchor. Although the Katrine had a deck, there were no rooms below, so the exhausted crew and passengers fell asleep where they were, strewn around in the growing warmth of the morning sun, like dolls on the floor of a messy child's room. Tim was in the middle of a pleasant dream when it was abruptly invaded by yelling. Not immediately remembering where he was, Tim opened his eyes and was greeted by blinding brilliance. He had fallen asleep on his back and was staring into a noonday sun. Adrian crawled over to Tim, motioning for him to stay down. An arrow hissed overhead. Kemp was shouting orders to cut the anchor and row. Sailors scrambled, bending low to protect themselves. Seeing his passengers begin to wake, Kemp bear-walked over, trying to keep his body below the gunwales of the ship.
"We must have been blown into elfin territory by the storm."
Startled, everyone crouched close to the deck planks as they listened to Kemp with apprehension and fear.
"Three elfin privateers have cornered us, and without our sail, we can't outrun them."
William carefully raised his head up high enough to see the elfin ships.
"They think you're only a merchantman and are trying to scare you, so don't run. They're only after your cargo and will let you go after they relieve you of it. But if they find us here, that's another matter altogether."
"That's little comfort, William. You are here, and there's no place to hide you, so we'll have to fight."
"No!"
commanded William.
The normally boisterous Kemp kept quiet, anxiously poking his head above the rail to see the location of the elfin ships.
William's eyes narrowed, and he fixed his gaze on Tim.
"I have a hunch that you, boy, you hold the key to saving us."
Tim imagined William's eyes penetrating into his brain, exposing his thoughts and memories.
You do have a way, don't you, Tim? I've been watching you, and I know you're a quester. You can call the Arch. And that metamorph gave you something, didn't she? Something that'll help us.
Tim was having difficulty getting past his distrust of William, so he sat silently considering.
Tim, if you can help us, do it.
Maya urged, turning to Adrian for support.
It's not that simple. If we're in a game, it might be better to lose a life and respawn than to help a potential enemy.
Tim glared accusingly at William. He needed time to think, but could see from Maya's expression that she still wasn't convinced that this was some sort of virtual world. From the fear in her eyes, he realized that Maya believed they were in real physical danger.
Tim, I'm on my last respawn for this level, and we don't know what that means yet in here. It might not be the best move, but until we know more, if what you have will help us get out of this, you'll have to play it. At least it might buy us some time.
Tim knew that Adrian was right, at least in the short term. So with reluctance, he called the panel. The air around him once again crackled and pixelated, and almost instantly Tim was surrounded by a tornado of glowing glyphs. He quickly found the right one, then typed in a word on a hovering translucent keyboard, and immediately, the world around Tim melted into a void.
Come on, it's a cheat. It'll take us to the quest target. I don't know how long it'll stay open.
Without hesitation, Adrian and Maya jumped through. William moved toward the opening, but Tim cut him off.
I still don't trust you,
Tim warned, then turned and disappeared into the event horizon.
Don't worry, Kemp. Without us here, you'll be safe. Sorry for the trouble I've brought your way, old friend. But I promise, I will repay you next time we meet.
William unceremoniously pushed Paget through the portal and quickly followed. Then it was gone, snapping shut like a spring-loaded door. Kemp waited, then turned away and barked the orders for a surrender. A new space seemed to fuzz into existence. At least that was the way Tim's mind comprehended it. Pixels floating, then fixing into patterns of ever-increasing resolution until the view of a room was built up. At first in chunky black and white, but the pixels smoothed into curves, and color finally faded in. But only to a point. The space was not like the rest. It wasn't a convincing reality. It looked like a game. Maybe it was a programming glitch, or a computer problem, or the game designer just didn't care because it didn't matter at this point in the quest. It was good enough, utilitarian but workable. Tim's mind raced through the possibilities as a portal closed behind him, morphing into a row of nondescript shells. He looked around, trying to orient himself and tease some recognition of this place from his stubborn memory. The room was lined with neat rows of storage shelves, packed tightly with small metal discs. There were no other furnishings except what looked like a fountain in the center of the room. It consisted of a small metal cylinder that extended up from the floor for about a meter. Welded to its top was a bronze bowl, and onto that, a band of flat silver that formed an arch. Water seemed to materialize two-thirds of the way up the arch, then immediately fall down into the bowl, like a small geyser floating in midair. The fountain appeared to be rendered in high resolution compared to the rest of the room, and on top of the silver handle sat a translucent plate bathed in green light. Tim turned his attention back to the room and noticed with relief that they were all there, or rather, their cartoonish avatars were. Colors a bit too garish, and body movements a bit too mechanical. It almost made Tim laugh as Adrian and Maya came to greet him.
This is too weird, Tim. What did you do?
The polygons forming Maya's mouth didn't quite shape to the words she was saying. Tim half expected a dialogue box to appear above her head.
I didn't do this. Remember, it's a game. Look at William and Paget. They don't seem bothered by it.
They were standing together in a corner of the austere room, calmly engaged in an intense discussion, ignoring Tim and his friends.
I don't know. Maybe this part of the game is supposed to look like this.
Then it came to Tim.
Adrian, don't you remember? This is the archive. It's where the entire knowledge of the machines is stored. We must be on their island.
Yes. They call them the Floating Islands.
William added as he and Paget broke off their discussion and moved into the center of the room.
Tim, if we're going to find the key and get out of here, you've got to tell me what you know.
William tried to look calm and sincere, but Tim only scowled.
Not until you tell us who you really are and what you're trying to do. I've already broken my usual rule and shared a cheat.
William looked as frustrated as a 3D model could.
You're going to have to accept that the usual doesn't apply here, Tim.
I can't tell you anything other than that I'm here to assist Paget. And I can help you too. But you've got to be honest with me. Did the metamorph give you anything else?
Tim looked at Maya and Adrian, but neither could help. They were still adjusting to the reality of being here and knew even less than him. He'd have to rely on his own experience and the instinct that he had developed through hundreds of hours of gameplay. One thing he knew from the real-world version of this game was that things were not that easy, and when they were, it was usually a tactic to make you so overconfident that you'd make a mistake. Using the cheat could have been just that, thought Tim. He had been forced to play it as an easy way out, and that made him feel very uncomfortable.
No, she didn't give me anything else. She just gave me the cheat to bring us here, and now I'm not sure I should have used it.
A ceiling-to-floor metal panel at one end of the room wisped open, spilling pure blue light out onto the floor. The hums and clicks of a machine followed, and a large silhouette moved into the opening. It shuffled its metal and polymer feet, swaying side to side in a kind of awkward waddling motion until it stood between them and the center of the room. To Tim, it looked laughable, like a classic sci-fi robot from the 1950s. Big, awkward feet, a squared metal body that could have come from an old washing machine, stovepipe legs, four retractable arms with steel and carbon pincers instead of hands, and a cube-like necklace head that swiveled back and forth on its flat metal shoulders. Two red optical sensors were roughly positioned where human eyes would be, and a thin, rectangular red light formed its mouth. Its head slowly turned, checking all the shelves and storage racks, until its face stopped at Tim and William.
What are you doing here?
The robot's voice clicked out in a precise monotone, its red glowing mouth pulsing in time with the words.
Humans are unpredictable. You are the entropy that destroys our perfect order. Your presence here defiles this great monument to machine intelligence.
And I suppose we're glad to meet you too.
William politely bowed.
I'm William. We're from the guilds. And these are my apprentices. We mean no harm or disrespect, and we're certainly not here to destroy the great archive. Quite the opposite, in fact. We're here questing knowledge.
This is not relevant. Humans have been destroying our installations and our ambassadors, so your removal is necessary.
Two arms retracted into its bulky metal body, then extended out again. Instead of pincers, they now sported short, clear, crystalline rods.
I'm sorry, but I beg to differ. It is relevant. I am a friend of RC-102, your glorious leader, and he has granted me access to the archive whenever I need it. Now is such a time. We are here to exercise that privilege. So stand down.
William moved away from the group, and the robot turned to follow him.
We machines do not have relationships, in the sense that you mean, so the great RC-102 could not have been your friend.
We spent a lot of time together in the observation station on the northern coast.
The machine's mouth and eyes flashed violently.
I must protect our cultural heritage. Please stand still while I painlessly eradicate you.
As the exchange continued, Paget, with the grace and stealth of a cat, slipped behind the machine and in a well-practiced motion that'd make a pickpocket envious, she slid the plate from the fountain into her pocket. She caught William's eye, and he immediately changed his tone.
Well, I can see that this discussion's going nowhere. We're wasting our time.
William pulled the small metal ball that he had used against the elfin soldier from his pocket.
You were right. We're here to rain chaos on the machine world. We're going to destroy the archive.
Immediately, the robot stiffened its arms. Red bolts of lightning shot out from the clear rods, hitting William. Then, in a blinding burst of red light, William was gone.
Thanks for listening to episode 15, The Four Keys, Part 3. We were a little slow getting this episode out this month, but because it's summer, sometimes it's hard to find time to record, especially since the construction site down the street has started using a gas-powered generator. We're going to be on holidays soon, so there's only going to be one episode in August. This should be out around the 18th, so please look for it then in your podcatcher, and remember, you can visit our website or send us email at makeshiftstories@gmail.com.